we begin the program this afternoon by welcoming back to the program, well, a legend. My goodness, she has appeared in countless motion pictures like Seven Brides for Seven Brothers, Witness for the Prosecution, Funny Face, literally every television show you've ever seen in your life. She's done tremendous charity work for many, many years through the Thalians, and she's the author of a brand new memoir, Consider Your Ass Kissed. We are so happy to welcome back Miss Ruta Lee. Hello, Ruta.
Richard, and I once again tell you, take the title of my book seriously, apply it to yourself, because it comes with love and appreciation and gratitude.
Ruta, we have been counting the days since the last time you were on in hopes that we could get you back because we had such a fun time talking with you the first time around.
Well, thank you. That is a very kind thing to say. I have we've all been through a lot of crap, as I put it, with this COVID, and I'm so glad that it's sort of beginning, I hope, to taper off. In where I am in Palm Springs today, restaurants are open, things are open. I'm hearing theaters are going to open. I'm keeping my fingers crossed that that all comes to fruition tomorrow.
I sure hope so. And we're so sorry when we heard about the passing of your husband, Webb.
Thank you. You know, it was an interesting couple of years, and I now recognize how difficult it is for anybody that is putting up with their partners, their loved ones, their family, anybody with dementia. You are constantly tending and looking over your shoulder to make sure they're walking okay and they haven't tripped over something. And it's a very tough period to go through, and I learned a lot, and I learned to admire and appreciate the caregivers who are doing this every day. And all I can do is say, God bless them. It's a tough job.
You also lost a very dear friend of yours, Alex Trebek. You had worked together on High Rollers back in the 1970s. What was he like as a partner?
Richard, he was a partner that was excellent because he was polite and kind and nice to work with. But beyond that, as a friend, he was just the best you could ask for. I called on him many times to help me with my do-good work, as I put it. My Thalians, which, of course, Debbie Reynolds was one of the founders of, and she became my sister in charity and my best friend. But Alex was truly a great friend, and I called on him to help me with the Thalians or to help me with the City of Hope or to help me. Listen, you could call on him to come and fix your plumbing. I don't mean personal plumbing, but your house plumbing, because he was really a good fix-it man. He could put tiles on a roof. He could fix a broken fence. He could fix an alarm clock, and he could fix your plumbing. And I just adored him. I never really called on him for that stuff, but I did call on him to use his celebrity and his charm and his know-how in helping me with a show or whatever it may be, to raise funds for mental health, because that's what Thalians is, Hollywood for Mental Health.
Well, you have so many credits through the years. We went back through the IMDb database to find the very first one, which was The Adventures of Superman. Do you remember doing the show?
Boy, do I remember it. And I remember that I was a newbie, you know, I mean, just beginning working in show business. And I had to dance with a partner. And so I said, hey, why don't we rehearse during this lunch break? And I went to plug in the record player. And I got yelled at. It's amazing that they didn't kick me off the set. Said, don't you touch that little lady. You don't belong to the electricians union. You're not allowed to do that on the soundstage. Boy, did I learn a lot that day.
Speaking of dancing,
scared the hell out of me, but boy, I learned never to touch a wire or anything ever on a soundstage.
Speaking of dancing, we had George Chakiris from West Side Story on our show recently, and George was talking about obviously dancing in West Side Story with Russ Tamblyn and how Russ brought a different style of dance and was such a talented gymnast. And well, when you go back and watch the work that you all did in Seven Brides and that Michael Kidd choreography, what a workout.
We rehearsed the barn raising sequence for 6 weeks. That's how precise and difficult it was. And you remember that they danced on planks,
right,
that were so dangerous, because if you on one of those turns, if you missed a step, there went your leg or something, and you'd be incapacitated for a long time. And I'm just astounded. Of course, Rusty had a fabulous kind of gymnastic style that was absolutely sensational. But, I mean, you realize we had great ballet dancers, and you always think of ballet dancers as guys running around in pink tights and tutus, you know. And that's not the case. These guys were the butchest, most macho, fabulous dancers. And I think that it opened a lot of eyes to the fact that you don't have to be light in the boots in order to be a dancer. You just have to be fabulous at what you're doing. And oh God, did I ever learn a lot. And I loved Rusty. We used to hang out and, you know, have hamburgers together or maybe hit a movie or something. I don't mean that we dated, but we were pals. And I love to tell this story about him. I write about this in the book, in fact. He was stopping. He came into the studio dressing room and makeup room one morning, and he was pissed as hell. And I said, "What's wrong?" And he said, "I'll tell you what's wrong." He said, "I stopped in a little cafe on Hollywood Boulevard to get a pack of cigarettes. And as I walked down to get the cigarettes, I saw a lady sitting at the counter looking back at me and tittering and talking between them." And he said, "So I thought to myself, oh, they're beginning to recognize me because I've done a few movies now. They beginning to recognize me as a movie star." And so he got the cigarettes, and as he walked back to pay it to the cashier, he walked by the ladies again who were still kind of tittering and looking at him. And I have to remind you that all of the Pontippi brothers had flaming red hair, and Rusty's had turned out Lucille Ball orange when they dyed it, you know. And he had on a pair of chinos, because nobody wore jeans then, we didn't know from that. And he had on a sweatshirt that had been washed so many times that instead of dark blue, it was now a pale lavender. And as he walked by the ladies who were tittering again and talking to themselves, he gave them a great big smile and a wink, thinking, oh, they're going to enjoy that. And he heard one say to the other, "See, Maisie, I told you she was a lesbian." Now, this embarrasses the hell out of Rusty when I tell it, but I tell it at every golden opportunity.
We're talking with Ruta Lee here on Downtown. You did 5 episodes of Perry Mason. You were a murderer. You were falsely accused. You were a witness. What was the most fun?
They were all fun, but the most fun was working with that cast. Barbara was an absolute hoot. Ray Burr was such fun, and they were constantly playing pranks on each other and anybody that came in. And I got to be kind of almost a regular, and they all knew me and appreciated my being around and working hard and fast. But the best part was that our producer, who had been a great big fat movie star in the 30s and the 40s and was now producing this show, hired me so many times to play so many different things. And it was like going to acting school to be able to do all of that. And I appreciated it so very, very much. So to this day, I thank everybody involved with that show. And I also worked with Ray Burr in his later shows. And that was kind of wonderful, too. So thank God for that fabulous television show, which is still playing. It's still running. And I wish we were still getting residuals for it.
I watched it just last weekend. You also did 3 episodes of Maverick, and I'm a huge James Garner fan. Julie Andrews told us that she absolutely adored him and might have been her favorite co-star. Was he as good a guy as everybody says?
Absolutely. He was such fun. And I too, like every girl, had a crush on him. Of course, that wasn't going to go anywhere. He was very married, you know, and has always been, unfortunately. Except, very interesting, one of my best girlfriends was Barbara Stewart, who was Miss Bunny on Gomer Pyle.
Right.
She's done lots of great dramatic things, but she's most remembered and recognized from Gomer Pyle as Miss Bunny. She was engaged to Jimmy when his name was Baumgartner, before it became Garner. And her mother never forgave her for breaking off that relationship. And I don't blame her. I kind of want to kick her in the derriere for it, too.
Now, people may not know you auditioned for the role of Ginger on Gilligan's Island.
Yes, I did. And I looked awfully cute, but I didn't have those great big huge boobs that our darling girl...
Tina Louise.
She's still a pretty woman. She lives in New York. I see her on occasion when we're invited to the same events or whatever. But I could have learned to dislike her, but except that she was too cute, and she did a great job on it. But what a lovely, successful run that is. And I got to play with the captain in a movie that I did, Bullet for a Bad Man, I think was the name of it. It was an Audie Murphy movie, and he was playing, I don't know, some bad guy that the sheriff was out after. And I was one of the bad girls. Bad girls are always more fun to play.
Sure. You did a great episode of The Twilight Zone as well. Did you have much interaction with Rod Serling during the shooting?
During the shooting and after the shooting, and I had dinner with him a couple of times when we both happened to be in New York for something or other. And I adored the man. I thought he was so bright and so funny and such a good friend. But he was also a heavy-duty smoker, Richard. Oh, my God. One cigarette didn't go out that he didn't have the other one already lit. And, that would drive me crazy, you know, because he, no matter where we were and what we were, and those were the days when you could, you know, smoke on a plane or smoke in a restaurant, and I went crazy. But, God, he was wonderful, absolutely wonderful. And my leading man, Patrick, was fabulous. And, of course, it was, I think, my favorite role. And one of the nicest things ever happened to me on that set. And, what was the... You'll know the names. I'm doing a blank on names today. I'm that age where I forget names. Who was married to Clark Gable?
Carol Lombard.
Yes. After one of the scenes that I had to do that was kind of a little tougher, and I got it all in one take, applause came from way up in the catwalks from the... And the guys on the set, there was great, big, fat round of applause. And I looked up to say thank you, and they smiled down and said, "Hey, Ruta, we love you. You remind us of our favorite, Carol Lombard."
Oh, wow.
And I thought, wow, what a terrific compliment. She was totally beautiful and totally talented, and, oh, how sad that we lost her so young.
You also are a recipient of the Golden Boot Award for your work in Westerns. Did you have fun doing those Westerns?
Oh, my dear. I adored doing the Westerns. I didn't adore having to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning to meet them at the set at 5 so you could be on location way out in the valley or some mountainous area, you know, at 6 in the morning. And so I learned so much. And I say this in the book as well, that I learned from the wranglers, the guys who really aren't on camera very much, but they have to get the horses together or the cattle together or the sheep, whatever, you know, you're working with. They taught me how to get on and off a horse because I'm little and horses are usually pretty big. And for me to reach up into the stirrup really takes an effort. And they also taught me how to handle and respect guns. I'm to this day a lover of guns, and I have beautiful guns that were given to me by the Cold Hot Firearms people as trophies and prizes for things and just thank yous. And they taught me how to fast draw. They taught me how to keep a gun clean and nice and be safe with a gun. And I absolutely loved the whole thing. You still there, honey?
I sure am, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Got some dramatic music playing there in the background.
Well, what's happening is someone's trying to reach me on the other phone. That's okay. They'll wait.
All right. One of the great stories is not a part of the show business story of Ruta Lee, but it's the fact that you called up then-Soviet Premier Nikita Khrushchev to try and get freedom for your grandmother. Can you share some of that story?
Oh, I'd be happy to. I do. I give it a little more, I give it a better tone in the book than I. No, what the hell? I can talk about it. It's just we have to be fairly brief. I had been trying from the time I became a citizen of the United States, because as you know, Richard, I was born in Canada, in right. Montreal. And when I became a citizen of the U.S., I started making out what is called a vizov, because my mother, bless her, had, through the help of the Red Cross, after the war, located my grandmother, who had been moved, deported, taken out of Lithuania and her meager little hovel of a home, and deported with my grandfather to Siberia. Why? Nobody knew. They were not the literati or the cognoscenti or the teachers or the artists or the performers or writers. They were little farm folk. What made them even survive was the fact they had a cow and they could make milk and cheese. And they got deported, and my grandfather died en route to Siberia. His legs were frozen on the cattle car that they were being deported on. And when they took off his boots, the flesh came off with it. Mm. Gangrene had set in. My grandmother didn't even know it because she remained on the train and when they took my grandfather off. And she was deposited somewhere where she had to fend for herself. There were sort of barracks-type buildings, tin-roofed with, you know, slat beds with no mattresses to lie on. It was a horrendous existence, and after the war, my mother was able to locate her there, and we were able to send 40-pound packages that could include a pound each of, let's say, of lard or coffee or sugar or tea, and we could put in old clothes, which was wonderful. And my mother, after several years of doing this, would start rolling up $10 bills, $1 bills, $5 bills, $100 bills into tiny, tiny, tiny little rolls, and she'd sew them into the seams of clothes we were sending. And then later would say, because everything was censored, everything came with black lines through it, she would say, Joe's, her husband's clothes, would be maybe a little too big for her, so take out the shoulder pads and try and pass on that they should find. And so some of those dollars did help them sustain their lives. And eventually they were permitted to go back to Lithuania. And this little grandmother of mine literally hitchhiked across Siberia, getting rides on cattle cars or on trucks that were carrying carpeting or lumber or whatever, and they gave this maybe 90-year-old woman rides, you know, and she found some other members of her family, and eventually they were all permitted, if they wanted, to go back to Lithuania after Stalin's death, I guess it was. And my mother started making, or I started making out, vizovs, and that is an invitation in Lithuanian, in English, and in Russian. And the vizov basically said, dear grandmama, it was an invitation, dear grandmother, come to live with me in America. The climate will be so much better for you because you are not well now, and you will be a burden to your family and the state. I am willing to take on full responsibility financially for moving you. Please come and join me. And I had to have that vizov stamped with a notary seal. The notary seal had to be approved with the city seal, Los Angeles city seal. The city seal had to be approved by the state seal in Sacramento, and then the whole thing went to Washington and had to be approved by the state of the State Department seal. And this whole package, now loaded with ribbons and medals, got sent to the Soviet Union. She would take it to the local commissar, and invariably they would say, "Niet." And 6 months later, I'd have to do it all over again. And I did that for 12 years. And one day, we got a letter saying she was dying. And I joined my mother in a spate of tears and said, I can't believe that my one remaining grandparent, for all we know, could be dead, because letters took anywhere from 2 to 6 weeks to travel from Lithuania. And I went out with friends that night. And the more wine they poured, the more evident it became that I should pick up the phone and call Khrushchev. So I did. In a slightly drunken stupor, at about 2 a.m, I called. And in those days, thank you, God, there were person-to-person calls. Some of your listening audience will be too young to know what that meant, but it meant that you paid maybe twice as much for the call, but you didn't pay if you didn't get your party.
Right.
And so the operator said to me, on the American operator said, when I said, I want to talk to Nikita Khrushchev, the Kremlin, Moscow, USSR. She said, how do you spell Khrushchev? I almost flopped. Anyway, I finally, after about 6 hours of waiting back and forth and back and forth, the operator said, Mr. Khrushchev, no speak it English. You speak with his interpreter? And I said, yes. Because I remembered that his interpreter was a very handsome young man that traveled with him when he was banging his shoe and saying rude things to Americans that the translator made very, very palatable to our rather Victorian ears here in America. And my father used to laugh because he'd say, Khrushchev didn't say that. But anyway, I talked to him, and he said, oh, Miss Lee, we know all about you here in the Soviet Union. What can I do for you? We see your movies. And I said, I want to come to Lithuania, which was one of the satellite states that they didn't allow anybody into from America unless you were a very high official and party member, you know. And I said, I want to go to Lithuania, and what's more, I want to bring my mother and father, and I want to come now. And he said, well, talk to your congressman about it. And of course, by now I was sober enough and just testy enough to say, what the hell does my congressman have to do with my traveling in your country? This is not a matter of politics. This is a matter of the heart. I don't even know if my grandmother is alive or dead at this point. If she's alive, I'll see her. If she's not, at least I'll go to her gravesite. And he said, talk to the embassy again in Washington. And I thought, oh, this is a slough off, because I'd already talked to everybody from the gardener to the upstairs maid, and it was niet, 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 niet. I called back in a half hour, the way he told me to, and the hotlines must have been flashing, because this time I was connected immediately to the first secretary at the embassy, and the first secretary was Lithuanian, and he later became the Minister of the Exterior, and he became a good friend. And let's put it this way, 48 hours later, my mother and father and I were on a Pan Am flight to Moscow, a gate city, and then back to Lithuania. And to cut a very long story short, my grandmother had been moved to a hospital. They didn't even have aspirin, but at least they took very good care of her as best they knew how. And 6 months later, I went back on my own and brought back my grandmother. And none of this would have happened if it hadn't been, basically, for a wonderful man who was the AP wire service reporter from Hollywood, Jimmy Bacon. And James did a beautiful story on my leaving that hit the worldwide headlines all over, whether it was China or Siberia or Afghanistan or wherever. And I knew nothing about it because I was on a plane and out of touch. I knew nothing about what was going on. And the story basically said, you know, young Hollywood starlet fights Khrushchev and goes to rescue grandmother from the Soviet Union. And so, of course, they let me have my grandmother. The eyes of the world were focused on me in Lithuania, and I didn't know diddly squat, but of course they were going to be good to me. They had to look good in the eyes of the world. So I'm very, very grateful to the press that really helped me do that.
That is an incredible story. One of the many great stories you'll read in Ruta Lee's new memoir, Consider Your Ass Kissed. Always a delight, Ruta. Thank you so much for spending time with us today.
Thank you, and thank you for sharing your wonderful audience. Richard, you're very, very special. So when you come out to California, come on over, and I'll buy you a glass or six of wine.
That sounds like a plan indeed. Thank you so much, Ruta. Be well.
You too. God bless you. God bless America.
Ruta Lee on Downtown. What a way to begin here on a Friday afternoon at 4:32. Rich Kimball, Carrie Haskell with you. And again, Ruta's new memoir, available now, Consider Your Ass Kissed.